Chapter 34 Verse 1 Now Dinah, the daughter whom Leah had borne to Jacob, went out to visit the daughters of the land. The Torah explains why Dinah was out on her own. She was not looking for men or for trouble, which for young women is often the same thing. As the sole daughter with 11 brothers, she understandably wanted to meet and befriend other women. Nevertheless, in many traditional cultures, it was, and is to this day, risky for an unmarried young woman to venture out on her own. Verse 2 Shechem, son of Hamor the Hivite, chief of the country, saw her and took her and lay with her by force. These three verbs describe the three stages of a rape. A man sees a woman, takes her sexually by force, and causes her to suffer. The Hebrew word translated here as by force, vayina eha, literally means he made her suffer. The use of this word makes it clear, Dinah in no way wanted what happened to her, and it was therefore rape. Rape followed by loving words. Verse 3 Being strongly drawn to Dinah, daughter of Jacob, and in love with the maiden, he spoke to the maiden tenderly. After raping Dinah, Shechem fell in love with her. The juxtaposition of violence and love is, unfortunately, a realistic portrayal of more than a few men's behavior. Shechem spoke to the maiden tenderly in order to convince her to marry him, either because he really did think he loved her, or because he hoped her agreement to marry him would render him acceptable to her family, who would then not seek to exact revenge for the rape. In any case, he clearly was not confident that his feelings were reciprocated by Dinah, for he kept her under a kind of house arrest. Telushkin, see verse 26. Although most ancient societies had laws against raping women of their own tribe or clan, there was rarely, if ever, an explicit prohibition against raping women of other clans. Thus, Shechem would not necessarily think that he had done anything morally wrong in violating a foreign woman. But he would surely recognize that Dinah's clan would view his behavior as inexcusable. The idea people owe decent behavior to members of other groups was one of the Torah's radical moral innovations. Indeed, the commandment to love the stranger is the most frequently repeated commandment in the Torah. Verse 4 So Shechem said to his father Hamor, Hamor is the Hebrew word for donkey. Shechem was therefore the son of a donkey, something that would have greatly amused the ancient Israelites who recounted this story. Verse 4 continued, Get me this girl as a wife. Shechem's blunt language reflected Shechem's and his world's view of women. They were property to be acquired. Verse 5 Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah. But since his sons were in the field with his cattle, Jacob kept silent until they came home. Verse 6 Then Shechem's father Hamor came out to Jacob to speak to him. Verse 7 Meanwhile, Jacob's sons, having heard the news, came in from the field. The men were distressed and very angry because he had committed an outrage in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing not to be done. Verse 8 And Hamor spoke with them, saying, My son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him in marriage. Hamor's manner of speaking skirted the fact that his son had already done much more than simply long for Dinah. He made it seem as if nothing untoward had taken place. This is a common defensive human trait, minimizing our misbehavior or that of a relative, especially a child. Verse 9 Intermarry with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters for yourselves. Hamor proposed an exchange of daughters who would presumably have no say in the matter. However, Even in such ancient cultures, women's wishes were not always disregarded. Laban and Bethuel, Rebekah's father and brother, had initially negotiated Rebekah's marriage to Isaac without any input from her. Genesis chapter 24, verses 50 through 51. But then, before the deal was finalized, they said, "Let us call the young woman and ask for her reply." Only after Rebekah was asked, "Will you go with this man?" Abraham's emissary and negotiator, and she answered, "I will," did she set out on the journey to meet and marry Isaac. Genesis chapter 24, verses 57 through 61. The Talmud subsequently ruled, "A father is forbidden to marry off his daughter while she is a minor. He must wait until she is grown up and says, 'I want so and so.'" Verse 10. "You will dwell among us, and the land will be open before you. Settle, move about, and acquire holdings in it." Hamor sweetened the proposal, hoping that even if Jacob and his sons know what was done to Dinah, their desire for peace, land, and wealth would enable them to overlook it. Verse 11. "Then Shechem said to her father and brothers, 'Do me this favor, and I will pay whatever you tell me.'" Determined to do whatever it takes to win the woman he desires, Shechem further sweetened his father's proposal. Underlying his offer was the assumption that Jacob and his sons could be bought. Verse 12. "Ask of me a bride price ever so high, as well as gifts, and I will pay what you tell me. Only give me the maiden for a wife." There are two possibilities for Shechem's offer of a blank check. Either he really was in love with Dinah, or he was afraid of Jacob's clan and would do whatever it took to assuage their anger. Verse 13. "Jacob's sons answered Shechem and his father Hamor, speaking with guile because he had defiled their sister Dinah." Dinah was being held in the town of Shechem, so her family would say whatever they deemed necessary and negotiate any agreement to get her back. The Torah tells us Jacob's sons answered with guile because they had a plan that hinged on pretending they didn't know their sister had been defiled by Shechem. Verse 14, "And said to them, 'We cannot do this thing, to give our sister to a man who is uncircumcised, for that is a disgrace among us.'" Every nation has a derogatory way of referring to other nations, and the ancient Israelites were no exception. To them, the term uncircumcised signified a man who was on a lower level, certainly not an appropriate match for one of their daughters. Verse 15. "Only on this condition will we agree with you, that you will become like us in that every male among you is circumcised." Verse 16. "Then we will give our daughters to you and take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell among you and become as one kindred." Verse 17. "But if you will not listen to us and become circumcised, we will take our daughter and go." Verse 18. Their words pleased Hamor and Hamor's son Shechem. Verse 19. "And the youth lost no time in doing the thing, for he wanted Jacob's daughter. Now he was the most respected in his father's house." The Hebrew term used here to describe Shechem, youth, is ne'er, the male equivalent of na'arah, the word used to describe Dinah. Verse 3. Translated here as maiden. He was, therefore, about as young as she. Avraham Evan Shoshin, author of what is generally regarded as the most authoritative Hebrew dictionary, defines ne'er as a term that generally refers to a young person between ages 12 and 15, though that may not necessarily accurately define the term as the Torah always uses it. In other words, this was probably not a fully grown adult man who took Dinah. Shechem was his father's favorite son, which explains Hamor's willingness to go to great lengths to get him the woman he now claimed to love. Verse 20. So Hamor and his son Shechem went to the public place of their town and spoke to their fellow townsmen, saying, having struck a deal with Jacob's sons, Hamor was now in a difficult position with respect to his fellow townsmen. Though he was chief of Shechem, verse 2, that did not give him the authority to command the townsmen to circumcise themselves. He could only try to persuade them it was in their best interest to do so. Verse 21. These people are our friends. Let them settle in the land and move about in it, for the land is large enough for them. We will take their daughters to ourselves as wives and give our daughters to them. Hamor and Shechem conveniently neglected to mention they had also promised Jacob's sons full property rights and as much money as they wanted, money Hamor would likely acquire from taxing the townspeople. They also neglected to mention the reason they made this deal, as the townsmen would never agree to circumcise themselves for the sake of one young man's love interest, or worse, to help extricate him from the consequences of his wrongdoing against a foreign woman and her clan. Verse 22. But only on this condition will the men agree with us to dwell among us and be as one kindred, that all our males become circumcised as they are circumcised. Verse 23. Their cattle and substance and all their beasts will be ours if we only agree to their terms so that they will settle among us. This promise was completely fabricated. Jacob's sons never agreed to give up their possessions and livestock. Apparently, the Hivites, understandably, did not respond favorably when Hamor and Shechem told them that they should agree to circumcise themselves. So, father and son came up with this additional incentive. Jacob's sons were deceiving Hamor and Shechem, and Hamor and Shechem, in turn, were deceiving their clan. Genesis is filled with people deceiving other people, because Genesis describes the human condition. Only by acknowledging how bad the human condition is does one appreciate how necessary the rest of the Torah is. It provides the moral guidelines to solve the problems of the human condition. Verse 24. All who went out of the gate of his town heeded Hamor and his son Shechem, and all males, all those who went out of the gate of his town, were circumcised. Once they thought the payoff would be riches, the townsmen were willing to circumcise themselves. People will endure a great deal of pain for a great deal of money. Verse 25. On the third day, when they were in pain, Simeon and Levi, two of Jacob's sons, brothers of Dinah, took each his sword, came upon the city unmolested, and slew all the males. This was a clear instance of clan violence. The brothers exacted massive revenge against an entire town of innocent people. There is nothing in the text that implicates the townspeople in Shechem's crime. Simeon and Levi were Dinah's full brothers. All three were children of Leah. Though the text doesn't say so, given the amount of violence they inflicted, it is reasonable to assume they were not alone. Even though Simeon and Levi were foreigners bearing swords, the inhabitants of Shechem allowed them to enter unmolested because of the deal they had made, a betrayal of trust that makes the brothers' behavior all the more reprehensible. Verse 26. They put Hamor and his son Shechem to the sword, took Dinah out of Shechem's house, and went away. There is a plausible defense of Simeon and Levi. They did not believe Shechem would release their sister without a wedding. Therefore, they had to rescue her and could do so only while the citizenry was disabled. Furthermore, following the mores of the time and place, these brothers knew they could not kill only Shechem and his father, the clan's chief. Leaving any of the male Shechemites alive would have led to a counterattack. The problem with this defense is the brothers didn't make it. In verse 31, they stated their only reason was Dinah's and their family's honor. We today would argue the family's honor was defiled by their mass killing, not by the rape of Dinah. But they didn't live today. They lived 3,000 years ago. This culture of honor, of saving face through revenge killing, still operates in much of the region to the present day. The Torah sought to replace it with God's values, including trial by courts of law before meting out penalties, punishment of only the wrongdoer, not his entire clan, and punishment proportional to the crime. Verse 27. The other sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the town because their sister had been defiled. Verse 28. They seized their flocks and herds and asses, all that was inside the town and outside. Verse 29. All their wealth, all their children, all their wives, all that was in the houses they took as captives and booty. Whatever justification there could conceivably have been for the killings, there was no conceivable justification for the kidnapping and the looting. Verse 30. Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me, making me odious among the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My men are few in number, so that if they unite against me and attack me, I and my house will be destroyed." For reasons that are not clear, Jacob's criticism was directed at Simeon and Levi alone, even though the behavior of his other sons was also abhorrent. But Simeon and Levi started the whole terrible process. Whatever the reason, this was a failure on Jacob's part. Instead of censuring his sons for committing evil, Jacob complained they had endangered his household. In short, Jacob responded not with moral outrage, but with pragmatic rebuke. To be fair, however, Jacob did morally rebuke these two sons on his deathbed. The heartlessness displayed toward the town of Shechem by Jacob's sons and their disregard for its impact on their father foreshadowed the heartlessness they later displayed in the treatment of their younger brother Joseph and the effect it had on their father. Genesis chapter 37, verses 18 through 27. Cruelty leads to more cruelty. This story makes the Israelites appear odious. Nevertheless, the Torah includes it. The Torah is an honest and balanced portrayal of the Israelites and of the full range of human behavior which the Torah seeks to influence. Its honesty about the Jews and about humanity is a major reason I believe the Torah is true. Verse 31. But they answered, "Should our sister be treated like a whore?" Like their grandfather, Laban, the brothers employed the principle that the best defense is a good offense. They essentially said to their father, "Should we allow our sister, your daughter, to be violated by a stranger and married off to her rapist, just so that our household can be safe and secure?" Presented this way, the brothers undermined Jacob's pragmatic rebuke. Though their defense did not justify killing innocent people or plundering the town and its remaining inhabitants, innocent women and children, Jacob could think of nothing to say in response. Not until many years later, on his deathbed, did Jacob strongly condemn these two sons on moral grounds. "Their weapons are tools of violence. Let not my person be included in their counsel, for when angry, they slay men. Cursed be their anger so fierce and their wrath so relentless." Genesis chapter 49, verses 5 through 7.